Craig, is there any reason to think Myers is going to approach that level of stolen base output again?
I mean,
Is that Will Myers? He's mad. Of There Is No Offseason, a baseball prospectus daily podcast focusing solely on Fantasy Keeper and Dynasty League formats. I am your host, Ben Carsley of BP Boston and the BP Fantasy Team, and I am joined, as always, by BP's managing editor, Brett Sayer, and BP's minor league editor, Craig Goldstein. Gentlemen, I believe this would be 3 weeks in a row, or three instances in a row, we're recording Tino on time. Is that correct?
It is correct.
That is an accurate fact.
Yeah, that's and those are hard to come by these days.
Yeah, the alternative fact being that we're a daily podcast.
Well, you know, that just really depends on how I interpret what daily means. I
think sometimes you disagree with the facts.
Right.
Yeah.
That happens.
We are an alt daily podcast.
Brett, let's just call us what we really mean. Let's not dance around. All right, so this week on Tino, we are going to discuss the Dynasty first base and second base lists, which went up on BP last week and this week, respectively. So I'm going to take us through the first base list. We'll take a little break, and then Brett will take us through the second base list. But for those of you who are new or haven't caught on yet, basically this is just part of a weekly series we have at BP every year in which we devote an entire week to a position in terms of fantasy. So go on the site and check it out right now. We have single year rankings just for 2017. We have dynasty rankings, 3 year rankings, AL and NL only rankings, get to know series that is slowly draining whatever life force I have remaining away from me. And the nice thing is if while you're on the site, you read the top 10 lists we have, you can see just a little bit of Craig Goldstein's soul die a little more with every installment. So it's great for those of you who sort of enjoy when bad things happen to us. But without further ado, we will jump into the top 50 fantasy first baseman list that Brett published on January 19th. And we'll try to do a little bit better about, you know, verbally telling you guys where people rank. Sort of the best way to do this is to call up the article while we're talking. But, you know, maybe you can't do that while you're listening to the podcast. So we'll try to be a little bit clearer there. So, Brett, we will start with you and we will start at the very top. Your first five first basemen are Goldschmidt, Rizzo, Miggy, Freeman, and Votto. Would you say this is sort of one tier, or do you think there are sort of different tiers within this top five?
I think it's one relatively fluid tier. But I think there's a noticeable difference between Goldschmidt and Votto, noticeable enough that I don't even know where you would break it. Maybe after Cabrera.
I was gonna say maybe after Rizzo, given the age differences.
Yeah, but I mean Miggy he's Miggy. I don't think he's going to slow down really anytime soon. You know, he's 3 years older than Goldschmidt, a year older than Votto, 2 years older than Votto.
That sounds right to me.
Yeah, it feels like Cabrera has been around forever, mostly because he came up when he was 19. But he is, he's
going to be 34. Yeah,
it'll be 34 during the season. So, yeah, he's not. You know, he's not.
Votto is 33.
Yeah, so I got that one right.
Yep.
I think he's 4 years older than Goldschmidt, though.
Correct.
Yeah. I think that the next 3 years of Miguel Cabrera will be good enough or elite enough that that he deserves to be closer to the top tier than the next tier. But it's really, I mean, it's tough to make a break anywhere here.
Craig, do you largely agree with the ordering of this top five?
Yeah, I do. I think you could make a case for Votto to be higher based on kind of his second half. And I mean, he was absurd in the second half. I don't have it in front of me, but it was, I think he like slugged 600 for the entire second half or something like that. I think, you know, I was kind of thinking to myself, as you guys were talking, that the gap between Rizzo and Goldschmidt wasn't that big. And then I realized Goldschmidt had 32 stolen bases last year.
Yep.
That was new to me. I mean, I knew he was amazing, and I knew it was a little bit of a down year relative to kind of his power output in years past, but getting 32 stolen bases from first base is insane. So yeah, no, it makes sense to me on that front. And I would have put Goldschmidt in front anyway. I just wasn't sure if the gap might have been tightening. But even if he's going to have a little bit of a power output, I think your overall value is going to be higher with Goldschmidt anyway.
Yeah. And if you do want Votto's exact second half stats, he hit 408, 490, 668 with 15 home runs, 53 runs, 55 RBI in 262 at bats.
So that's not a small sample. And
well, I mean,
it's an 1100 OPS, right? Almost 12.
It is 1158.
There you go. That's
see what happens when you stop just worrying about getting on base. Stop being such a selfish player, you know?
You drive guys in for once in your life.
Yeah, but seriously. Do you know what Joey Votto's second half OPS was in 2015?
No.
1152.
Wow.
He hit 362, 535, 617 in the second half in 2015.
Okay, so trade for Joey
Votto. Yeah, I was just going to say. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, pretty much.
I was going to say maybe it was when he faked giving the ball to a kid, just gave him superpowers, but...
Oh, Dick Joey Votto is my favorite baseball player.
Yeah, everyone got mad about it, but that was really good.
Yeah, but if you're gonna do that, yeah, it has to be like done in a funny way, and he pulled it off.
Or it has to be done in Philadelphia.
Those are the two rules. So the one name, as I was looking at the very top of this list, that you know stuck out to me at first, although definitely fits the more I think about it, is Freddie Freeman, because we do really only have 1 year of this massive power outburst. I know he had been sort of trending up in power for a while, but last year his ISO is up to 267. His career ISO is still 196, for example. So Brett, what makes you confident that, you know, this is sort of closer to the real Friedman now, which I'm assuming is what you think given his ranking?
I don't actually. I think Freeman and Votto are really close. But I don't think Freeman's a 300 hitter or a 30 home run hitter. But he is going to play the entire season at 27. And I think he's a pretty good bet to be a top 10 first baseman for a while. You know, it's more the longevity with Freeman. You know, I'd clearly take any of these other four guys over Freeman in 2017 alone. But the age is really what makes up the gap.
Brett and I kind of went back and forth on this over G-Chat. I don't know if it was specifically for this list, but we were talking about Freeman. And, I mean, we should make it clear. Like, we were all much bigger Eric Hosmer fans than Freeman. We've been down on Freeman for a while. So we should make that clear. But, I mean, when I look at his profile, there's been a lot of up and down. There has not been another 30-homer year. But... He did hit more. I believe he hit more fly balls. He upped his fly ball percentage to 40.5%, which is kind of a league wide thing. The league hit more fly balls, and I think that's getting into some of the stuff that teams are probably learning from StatCast. Is you know, adjusting guys' launch angles, and especially with guys like Freeman, I can buy that there's a percentage improvement, whether it's a full 5 percentage points and it sticks there, or if it's more towards like 37 or 38, I still think that's important. And he also had a higher home run per fly ball rate, which again, even if you adjust that back, if you have a higher fly ball percentage, you're probably still talking about something in the neighborhood of 25 to 29 or 30 homers, I think, for Freeman. There's also that he's, like, Brett doesn't believe he's a 300 hitter, and I think that's probably fair, but he is a career 288 hitter. So 300 is not far afield, and it's well within the range of standard variance in terms of his outcomes. And he's hit 319 before in a season, and you know, I don't think it's unreasonable. He's hit, I think, 280 every year but one, or 280 or above every year but one in his career. So he is a good hitter. I think you can buy some of the power improvement. And the reality is they don't have that bad a lineup, right? You get a full year of Dansby Swanson, a full year of Matt Kemp, a full year of Ender and Ciarte, assuming that the latter two don't get hurt. But, you know, I think there are contextual reasons to think he could be, you know, a 90-run, 90 RBI guy with 25-plus homers and a 285 or so average.
Yeah, I mean, the counting stats stuff, I think, is just overblown anyway. I mean, last year the Braves had a terrible lineup. And
he had 102 runs and 90 RBI.
And, yeah, he had 193 combined runs in RBI. And, the you know, we don't know what the new park is going to play like, but it's probably going to be a little bit more offense-friendly than
that's another factor.
The old park. So, right. Yeah, but, you know, saying he's not going to hit 300 is not a knock on Freeman. I think he's a pretty safe bet to hit over 280, which is, you know, given this environment, is a big deal.
Yeah. So, and he doubled his stolen base output from the year before. 6 stolen bases.
Almost as impressive as Goldschmidt.
give him 5 years. He'll just keep going.
So we talked about the top 5 names, and I think these are the type of big, you know, fantasy stalwart, traditional mashers we are used to sort of rostering at first base. And then even as soon as you get to 6 and 7, you start getting the players with more question marks in Jose Abreu and Will Myers. Myers in particular is interesting to me because he did some things last year that we've been waiting for a long time and that I think we view as legitimate, like his ability to challenge for 30 home runs. And then he stole 28 bases, sort of continuing our trend of first baseman running way more than we should. Craig, is there any reason to think Myers is going to approach that level of stolen base output again?
I mean,
Is that Will Myers? He's mad. He doesn't want to.
He's pissed.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. He didn't want to hear my doubting thoughts. You know, I don't think so. 28 kind of came out of nowhere. He's not that big a speed guy. I mean, I guess, could he do it again? Sure. I think it's also contingent on him playing in 157 games again, which he did last year. And I doubt that's the case. It just hasn't been the case much in his career. I think that there's a reason to believe in kind of the overall offensive profile. He had the same, you know, weighted runs created plus as he did in 2015 when he only played 60 games and obviously stole far fewer bases. The concern for me for Myers is just that he's A, not going to be healthy, and B, without the stolen bases, I don't think he really comes close to being valued in this tier. And I know he did it once, and I'll be interested to see if Brett thinks he can do so again or really where he settles in. Because I guess if it's even at 15, there's a lot of value there, but I might opt for some of the guys behind him if that's the case.
I'll jump in at this point. I think that two things about Myers that I think make him a little bit better of a bet than I think some people think. The health stuff is a question mark. He is a greater health risk than most players, but you know, you can't quite compare his inability to stay healthy across his previous, you know, the previous years of his career than you can going forward, because he's at a much less taxing position. So playing first base will not take away his injury risk, but it will reduce his injury risk a little bit. And as far as the steals go, I mean, who the fuck is going to tell him not to steal? He never should have stolen 28, 29 bases in the first place. He's not fast. The Padres aren't going anywhere. So if he just likes stealing bases, no one's going to tell him not to. I mean, I could see him stealing 20 bases again, just because,
I guess the question to me is whether he ends up, whether he's like able to take advantage of people not expecting him to steal.
I think by the time you get to double digits, teams know you're thinking about going, and he continued to do it throughout the season. So I don't know how much of those, how many of those steals were just stealth, but you know, there's clearly some motivation and some ability to steal bases. So if the Padres were going to be a good team, I would say, maybe they just tell them not to run. Just they're going to try to win games, but they're not.
Brett, I know you said earlier that, you know, you think the contextual factors are overblown a little bit, but I mean, does the fact that Myers pretty much has the worst possible fantasy contextual factors for a hitter imaginable bother you? would he have ranked higher if he was on in a different organization?
Well, contextual factors meaning what?
Crappy ballpark and absolutely atrocious supporting cast.
Petco is an above average park for right-handed power. It is weird, but it is now an above average park for right-handed power.
Is that still a 1 year sample thing?
No, 3 years.
Okay.
It was always worse on left-handed hitters.
Yeah.
And it's still below average for left-handed hitters, but right-handed power is a slightly above average place to play. I mean, the lineup still stinks, and it's going to, because they're gonna either play shitty fringe major leaguers, or they're gonna play brand new prospects who may struggle out of the gate. So the lineup thing is absolutely true, but the ballpark thing I'm really not concerned about.
Fair enough. So I don't really feel the need to talk about any of the next four players on this list: Edwin Encarnacion, Hanley, Chris Davis, and Carlos Santana. No one's status really changed dramatically this offseason except for Edwin, and we've already spoken about him. So unless there are any objections, I think I'd like to move on to Eric Hosmer at 12.
Can I just ask a quick question on any of 8, 9, or 10? I'll ask you, Ben, since you haven't been able to chime in a ton. How far up would you take any of Edwin, Hanley, or Davis for just a 1 year league? Or like, if you're contending and have the opportunity to, you know what I mean.
I would have Edwin fifth or sixth.
Okay.
Yeah. He'd be above Myers and Abreu for me, and I think you could make a pretty solid argument that he should be above Freeman just for next year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I can buy that. I mean, I think that's such a perfect landing spot for him. And the one thing I would note about Abreu, and it makes it more complicated because it was easy kind of to be out on Abreu, but his second half,
He was tremendous.
Or from the break on, was 319, 384, 514, which was basically the guy we thought he was after his first year. So,
yep.
All right, so let's do the little, I don't know, it's not really a mea culpa on Hosmer, because I think we've sort of known that our wildest Hosmer dreams weren't going to come true for a while now. But, you know, he had appeared to take somewhat of a step forward in 2015. You know, the power wasn't great, but in 2015, he hit 297, 363, 459, 18 homers, 7 steals, flirted with 200 combined runs in RBI. Last year, the power took a step forward, but the average fell a lot. So, Brett, I mean, is this just who Hosmer is, someone who's going to sort of fluctuate in different categories enough to be useful, but there's really never a breakout coming now that he's 27?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if you had told me last year that he was going to hit 25 homers and knock in over 100 runs, I'd probably be a little too excited, but you know, the strikeouts are up, the steals, you know, he hasn't had double digit steals since 2013 now. You know, I think he's just settling in as a pretty good first baseman, like a sort of fringe top 10 in a decent year, but usually in the, you know, top 12, 13 range, somewhat consistently. And, you know, it feels like there's something wrong with that because we expected more, but, you know, he's still a solid guy to own in dynasty leagues. It just feels worse.
Here's the problem with Hosmer. And I mean, it's something that we've talked about as a concern with someone like Christian Yelich in terms of their ceiling, but he had 59% ground balls last year. And I mean, the fact that he had 25 home runs or 24 home runs with that high, that many ground balls is insane. I mean, he had a huge homer per fly ball rate, and it was the highest of his career by a wide margin. I wouldn't anticipate that happening again unless he starts lifting the ball. It's just not going to work. I mean, there's a lot of reason, I think, to be down on Hosmer unless he starts putting the ball in the air.
Yeah, I mean, the other side of that is if he's going to do that, you would expect his batting average to be higher.
Right, if he's going to hit it on the ground that much, right, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, he hits a share of line drives.
He had a 300 BABIP, which granted is below his career average, but it's not like it was really low.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think the bottom line is he could be someone, if he starts lifting the ball early in the year and you see a change. I mean, we've had kind of Rob Mains has had this great New Year's resolution series on the site talking about like guys who change their approach and stick with it. And if you start tracking Hosmer early in the season and see he's lifting the ball more and you want to jump in, I mean, that's not the worst idea to me, but it's something that you have to be aware of what you're getting when you're purchasing it.
So I'm going to move this next here is Brandon Belt, Josh Bell, and Duda. I like that you have Belt and Bell next to each other, Brett, because that's a hard sentence to say, because Bell is sort of who I comp Belt to Bell often in terms of when people say, you know, who is Josh Bell going to be? I could see him having a very Brandon Belt career. Let's start going a little faster because we have a bunch of the list to get through. But Craig, is 15 an appropriate ranking for Lucas Duda, or is this Brett being too high on a Met again, specifically a Met first baseman?
I lean towards the latter, although I acknowledge that the ceiling with Duda is probably, you know, like a top 10 first baseman. I mean, between the health issues and the kind of sporadic production in the first place, he's a very streaky guy to begin with. excuse me. It's a little aggressive for me. And like, for example, if like he has Cody Bellinger behind him, just one spot. But if I could trade Duda for Bellinger, I'd do it in a second.
Talk a little bit about Bellinger, because I think people are getting carried away. I don't mean that because of what you just said. Mm-hmm. I more mean just because of the gaudy stats from last year.
Yeah, I mean, I think he was someone I was lower on coming into the year and even kind of at the midpoint last year than a lot of other people. He really exploded in the Cal League in 2015. And, you know, we had Wilson Caraman see him a bunch. And, you know, he said he was really selling out for power in a league, in a park that rewards power. And I was really worried that wasn't going to play up when you go, you know, high A to double A is a big jump. Getting out of the Cal League into the Texas League is a big difference in terms of kind of park factors and environment. And I thought Bellinger was going to really suffer. And, you know, he still struck out a lot, but he made adjustments. He was making more contact in the second half of the year in the Texas League. And the power really didn't disappear. I mean, he still will sell out to get it at times, but he's pretty smart in when he decides to do that. And he's not going to be, I don't think he's someone who's going to necessarily hit like 230, but he might be a lower average guy than I originally thought. He was kind of a smooth swinging guy, over slot guy when they signed him, and he's really added the power. And to get to it, he's kind of taken some off the batting average. But even if he's a 240, 250 guy, if he's able to get to that 30 home run power, it's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's someone who could have outfield. I mean, that's the other thing with him. He's a little bit multidimensional defensively. He's played some center field. I think he can play right field or left field, depending on where the Dodgers need him earlier in his career, because Adrian Gonzalez is signed through 2018. So that kind of helps him out a little bit.
Sure. So we've sort of entered this all Los Angeles tier. We have Bellinger at 16, Pujols at 17, every first base prospect at 18, and Adrian Gonzalez at 19. I don't think there's anything particularly interesting to say about Pujols, Cron, or Gonzalez. So, Brett, let's skip ahead to Vogelbach, Bird, and Reed, which is who you have at 20 through 22. I'm interested to know why you ranked Greg Bird here, because I think he's sort of overrated.
I think he is a little overrated too, but I think he can tap into enough of that power in that stadium, that he can, that he can challenge for 25 homers. You know, I think they're also going to give him all the playing time he can handle. So, I didn't think this spot was particularly bullish, mostly because, the names, once you start getting behind him, you're talking about names with some real flaws and question marks. Just out of curiosity, where would you have him on this list, Ben?
Well, Brett, you stole my thunder, because I was going to say that while it looks like Bird is overrated to me and I would have him a few spots lower, the tier behind this is pretty ugly. I do prefer Tommy Joseph to Bird. I would have him above him. And Napoli is so old that I get it. So, yeah, I mean, maybe Bird wouldn't be that much lower for me, but that speaks more to how thinned out this list gets after 22, 23, more than it does any real confidence I have in Bird.
Yep, that makes sense.
I'll just throw a name out that's in the next tier that I'd probably take ahead of him. And, well, yeah, I don't know. Dynasty. But in the next, 2 to 3 years, I wouldn't mind taking Kendrys Morales. It's not very sexy, but he hit 30 home runs last year, and it was not out of place with his talent level, I don't think. Like I said, it's not very sexy, but it's going to be real production. I think the there's risk and reward with Bird, and he's obviously so much younger that I get why he's ahead. But Morales is 8 spots behind him, and I would guess he's going to go, if you did a dynasty draft from scratch, I would guess he'd go somewhere between 10 rounds later. Like, no one cares about Kendrys Morales, right?
Yeah. Care so little about Kendrys Morales that I didn't. It's been a week since this list was published, and I still haven't changed the fact that I got his team wrong.
So there you go. And it's a good place to hit. I mean, he hit 30 home runs in Kansas City, which is a hard place to hit. And he's going to Toronto. So, do I think that means he hits 40 homers? No, but I think it means he's got a good chance of hitting 30 again.
Yeah, that's fair. I you know what, Craig? It's not just fair. You've convinced me. I would also have Kendrys Morales, who is not a Kansas City Royal, above Greg Bird. So I'm going to move us to the false precision round now, because the bottom half of this list is not very cute. Craig, we have Rowdy Tellez at 25, Matt Theis.
Yes. Yeah, I think it's Theis.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Look at that. Got it right. It's a white person name. At 26, do you think they belong in this tier, or would you have them down below with guys like, Trey Mancini and Bobby Bradley, who are about 10 spots below them?
Yeah, I mean, I would take Bradley over. I guess I'm much higher on Bradley than Brett is. I would take him in this tier over Theis. I'm not even that in on Tellez, but he slimmed down a lot, which I would have thought would mean Brett would no longer be interested. but he slimmed down a lot, and he still, he was able to access the power. He did it at the upper minors. I think there were a lot of questions about Tellez that, and he answered a decent number of them. Do I think that means he's a great real life prospect? No. Do I think he can be really useful in a fantasy sense? Absolutely. So I don't think Tellez is out of place. I do think I would probably flip Bradley and Theis.
Got you. Brett, you have Chris Carter at 30. How much of that is a function of the fact that he doesn't have a team right now?
Very little, just because I assume he's going to have a team before opening day. he's just, I mean, there is a real cap on the value that anyone can have when they hit 220, even if they do, you know, approach 40 home runs. So I think I have a hard time imagining he's not going to get playing time this year, but you know, he's also a player who could quickly find himself demoted into a platoon role. So it's really not dependent on where he signs. It's just really more about how the profile ages, and it's not well.
So Craig will now go to the 31 through 40 tier. Mm-hmm. Joe Mauer is at 34. Joe Mauer is about to be 34 and hasn't really been even remotely useful for fantasy players for 3 years. Would Mauer be this high for you, or would you have him closer to the end of this list, or at this point it might be fair to ask on this list at all?
Yeah, I mean, it's fair to say on this list at all, but at the same time, like, Ryan Zimmerman is also on this list and he hasn't been useful in years. Mauer isn't good. I would take a chance, and in fact, I did. Like, I'm in a 20 team dynasty league that I just traded a draft pick for Kenny Vargas, because I'd rather take a chance on him than someone like Joe Mauer. And he's at 38. I think there's a good case for a lot of the guys behind him who are just playing younger to be more valuable from a dynasty perspective. You know, if you are looking to plug a hole right now, you can't plug in a minor leaguer, and in that case, I get it. But I might even have him at the top of the next tier.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely something to be said for just accrued playing time when you get to this portion of a list.
Yeah.
But I think I might have him at 44, behind Ronald Guzman, but ahead of Casey Gillespie.
Yep, I think that's fair. I mean, for example, Adam Lind is a free agent. He's at 42. I think if he signed somewhere, I would immediately prefer him to Mauer.
So this begs the question, Brett, are you single-handedly trying to make up for the entire state of Minnesota being mean to Joe Mauer over the past few years?
No. Mauer, you look at his stat line, it wasn't good, but he was like really banged up at the end of the season and went 0 for his last. Like,
no, Joe what? Mauer banged up?
Yeah. Well, he played through it. That's the difference. Usually you can just rely on him sitting on your DL. But, I mean, if he had finished the season with his August 31st line, you know, it's a 780 OPS. I mean, it's not exciting, but, you know, he will play and he should, you know, get some counting stats, and he hit double-digit home runs. I mean, it really gets pretty ugly towards the end of the first base list. So, I mean, when you're doing these lists, you know, you can't, but at this point, you're probably using somebody at another position at first base, but they don't make it onto this list because we have very rigid positional eligibility rules.
Yes, we do. And everyone loves them.
Everyone does love them.
Okay. So final question to Craig, first, this 41 through 50 tier. If you had to pick one person from this tier who you think could maybe be closer to like the 25 range next season, who would it be?
This is going to surprise no one, but Ronald Guzman.
Fair enough. Brett, same question to you.
This is also probably not going to surprise anybody, but Adam Lind. I think if he ends up in a good place and
Brett,
hits,
he's like 33.
I know, but it doesn't really. I mean, look who's up in that range. It doesn't really take a whole lot.
My God, come on. At least pick Matt Adams. He's a platoon guy who's like younger, at least.
Yeah.
Adams would have been my answer.
Like what?
It extremely would not have been Casey Gillespie.
Adam Lind.
I have a thing for Adam Lind. Yeah.
I know. You and Breen are the part of the Appreciation Society.
Are the Appreciation
Society. Yeah, I was going to say the only two remaining members. Okay, so I know people got a little tired of the bit where I compared every first base prospect to CJ Cron, but when it comes specifically to Enya, do you think that was fair? Welcome back to episode 80 of Tino. I hope you used that break to solve the riddle of who CJ Cron was compared to when he was a prospect. So with first base now behind us, we are going to dive into the second base list. I hope you guys enjoy listening to us debate lists, because that's going to be your life for the next several editions of Tino as we try to power through this. So Brett, I will let you guide us through this one, as is normally the case when we do these two lists. And I think next time we should make Craig officiate one of these, because it's so much fun.
We definitely should.
People love to hear me talk.
That's not true, but, you know, everyone needs a break.
All right, so let's start at the top. I mean, I think it's pretty uncontroversial that Jose Altuve is at the top of this list. But Craig, what do you think Jose Altuve's power output is going to be for the next couple of seasons? I mean, he took a big jump to 24 homers in 2016. I think it's general consensus that that's not sustainable. But what is sustainable for Altuve from a power perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, he went from generally being around 4% homer per fly ball to 7.5% in 2015, and then nearly doubled it to 13% in 2016. I guess I'd be a little bit surprised if he was at that range again. But I think that 7.5% is not that unattainable. And so in that case, I think the 15 that he put up in 2015, 15 to 18, doesn't seem so crazy. I mean, he also significantly upped his walk percentage without really changing his strikeout percentage. So it might be that he's just been a lot better at finding his pitch and then driving it. And I don't necessarily put that past someone of his skill level. He still stole 30 bases. So yeah, I mean, I buy into Altuve at this point.
Okay. Ben, same question for you, but for Trey Turner.
Don't ask me about Trey Turner. I don't know. I feel like I'm the low guy on Turner, and every time I try to justify it, I can't. I just, it makes me nervous. He makes me nervous at number two here. Makes me nervous how much everybody loves him. I don't know. I don't have a good answer. I don't trust him. I'm aware. Right, I'm aware. I don't know why you'd listen to that if you're listening to Tino, but I don't know. I'm not entirely sold on the hit tool yet.
All right. Then I will ask Craig that question, and then I will come back to you for more players after. Craig, where do you think Turner's
power... I got lost power, in Ben's fear. What was the...
where do you think Turner's power settles? I mean, no, he's not supposed to be a power hitter. You know.
Yeah, but I don't think you can take his rate stats.
No, of course not.
Yeah.
So do we think he's a double-digit home run guy at this point?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I saw him in person this year, but I saw him in person the year he was drafted, and he had I questioned the average as well. So I certainly understand where Ben's coming from on that. I think, but he always had kind of a long swing. And so he was able to drive the ball to the gaps, and it doesn't surprise me that he's able to hit for a little bit of power. I don't think it's going to be, you know, what he had 13 in 73 games. I don't think he's going to hit 25 to 30 homers. I think 12 to 15, if you want to take the high end at like 17 or 18, sure, I think that's possible. But I also, you know, I think he generally, look, yes, he's very fast. So his average is going to be supported by that. But do I think it's going to be hard for a guy who strikes out 18% of the time to hit 342? Yeah, a little bit.
Yep, that is very true.
I mean, I'm not taking a risk by saying that, but, you know, I just think people need to realize, you know, kind of what it is. And the fact of the matter is, you know, if he doesn't hit 342, I mean, his on-base percentage, he walked under 5% of the time. So it does take away from his stolen base opportunities and stuff like that. I think you're going to see teams, you know, really, and pitchers really try and figure out how to get him out. And see him as kind of one of the top three guys in this lineup. And so I think he is going to be treated a little bit differently. And I'll be interested to see how he reacts to that.
Yeah, I mean, the nice thing that will that should buoy his value is, I mean, obviously he's got the steals, but he has Dusty Baker as a manager, and he's the fast guy on the Nationals. So
oh, yeah.
Unless unless he's dead, he will hit leadoff.
Yeah.
So that helps. Ben, tell everybody why they should not be concerned about a Robinson Cano regression, and they should just accept his greatness.
I mean, when a player is as consistent as he is, honestly, I think you need to sort of wait for the decline. Cano is the rare player where I'd rather be a year late on his decline than keep assuming it's going to come. You know, I mean, we're talking about an insanely good Hall of Fame level hitter. I don't think he's going to hit 40 homers again like he challenged last year. But I mean, if you told me he has several years remaining of an average between 280 and 300, 20 to 25 homers, and, you know, as flirting with 90 to 100 runs in RBI each, like that's just who Robinson Cano is. His supporting cast is getting better. And I don't think he's quite. I think he's younger than people think. He's only 34. He's not really that old yet. Yes, aging curves for second baseman and whatnot. But again, he's not really someone the rules apply to. So I think Cano is going to sort of continue to be a little bit of an undervalued dynasty league asset if your contention cycle, you know, has you going for a title in the next 3 years.
And again, I mean, people are going to get tired of me citing this, but it's important to look at when we're dealing with kind of what we've learned about launch angle and how it matters and kind of how power shifted this year in the league offense overall. But his fly ball percentage jumped 11 percentage points. So that's where some of that power came from. And if he retains, you know, even 80% of that, it's given his career homer per fly ball, you know, again, 25 to 30 is not unreasonable to expect in terms of home run output.
Yeah. So Ben, I'll go back to you. Where would you have Yoan Moncada on this list? His upside is clearly insane, but you know we haven't seen him yet. So where would he go for you?
Yeah, you have him at four on your list. I'm pretty sure I would have him at four on my list.
Okay. Craig, same question.
I mean, I think there's a case to have him at three. Just based on age, I think he comes up for good this year. He's going to stay at second base now. He can hit for power. He can hit, you know, he can run a lot too, which is something that Cano doesn't give you. Just on the number of years, right? I mean, you're right, Ben. 34 is not that old, but the aging curve is bad. And Moncada's, you know, early 20s. It's a 12-year gap. I mean, that's really a lot. And yeah, I mean, I think that's your case, right? It's just that it's age. And so if you're competing now, I totally understand. You know, are the next 2 to 3 years of Cano going to be better than Moncada? Probably. I think you can say, like, if you average the 3 years out, like, you'll probably end up with Cano ahead. I do think there's a chance Moncada beats him overall in that span. And once you're beyond that, it becomes even less of a question to me that Moncada's ahead. So I just think you can make that case. But I don't have a problem having them really close at 3-4.
Yeah, I mean, I think people get we hate to give the obvious sort of analysis or advice and just say contention cycle, but when you're talking Cano and Moncada, it really boils down to contention cycle.
Yeah.
Craig, how much are you buying 2016 Daniel Murphy?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to buy, I mean, it's a year and a half now, right? I never thought he was going to hit 400. I don't think he's the guy who challenged for 400 early on in the season. I don't think he's the 350 hitter either. But I do think there were legitimate changes to his swing. I think the power that got unlocked is relatively real. So do I think he can be like 290 with 20 home runs, 20 plus homers? Yeah, absolutely. And he's in a good park. I don't have a problem with him this high necessarily, but I do think that the gap between him and a guy like Kipnis in terms of just raw output the next few years is relatively small.
Okay. So who wants to talk about Ruy Odor?
I will.
Okay. What is Ruy Odor? Is he a power hitter now? Is yes. he someone who is going to hit for average like we thought he was going to originally?
No, I think he's a power hitter. He didn't hit for a bad average, but I think he's a power hitter who's not going to get on base very much. And look, he got 14 stolen bases this year. I don't know if that continues because I'm going off the top of my head, but I think he got thrown out a bunch of times. I think he was 14 for 21. I mean, that's not good. And I think there's a chance that they kind of realize he's something he's good at. So unless he gets better, it might minimize. That said, dude, I think he's a 25 plus home run hitter at second base, which all right. 260, 270 average is fine. I don't know that I'd have him this high. And that's more on the second base is really deep right now.
Yeah, it really is. I think you're sort of getting into this range where you could make an argument for a lot of these guys at 6, 7, and 8. I feel like Murphy at 5, I think, is pretty. Maybe I feel like that's a reasonably safe place to put him. As in terms of overall industry thought, but I think the next couple of spots are really just totally up for grabs.
I've been the Kipnis guy for a while, and I'm aware of that. But for example, I mean, Odor hit 271, 296, 502, 33 homers, 14 stolen bases, right? And it was the most stolen bases we've seen him have. Also the highest number of games we've seen from him. Kipnis hit 275, 343, 469 with 23 homers and 15 stolen bases. We've seen him go as high as 30 before. I think those days are gone, so that's fair. I would expect Kipnis to have a better year next year in fantasy more than I would Odor. Because the problem is if you take the... Even if you give him a small home run advantage, 3-4 homers instead of 10, Kipnis outproduces him overall, I would think.
Yeah, I would take Kipnis over Odor in a redraft league in 2017. But Kipnis is 7 years older than Odor, which sounds impossible. But
I do forget how young he is.
It's crazy. Odor is still 22. He has not turned 23 yet.
Yeah, and I guess that's the other thing to remember. Kind of, you asked what he is. I guess it's worth caveating that he can be many different things over the next 8 to 10 years. Like he can try and be a blend of what he's been before and what he is now and all of that stuff. And I hope he is, and I hope we see it. Yeah, I would take Kipnis probably in the next, like in the short term, like the next 3 year window. I'd probably take Kipnis. Yeah.
So Ben, who's the player in this sort of 7 through, I'd even go as far as to say 13 range, who you'd make the argument to be higher than I have on my list?
Well, not dramatically higher because I'm sort of going at the top of the tier you just gave me, but I think D. Gordon is going to end up being a little undervalued next year. Obviously, coming off of the suspension, we all know what the limitations that he has as a fantasy player because he's really not going to contribute much, if at all, in home runs or RBI. But, I mean, he is still very, very, very fast, and if you look at what he did in a half season of ball last year, he was on pace to challenge for 60 steals yet again.
And I don't really see that I don't see him slowing down anytime soon. So, you know, it does, you have to be a little more careful in your overall roster construction when you take a guy like Gordon, because you do have some ground to make up in homers and RBI. But if you told me Gordon is going to hit, I don't know, 275 or 280 with 60 steals and 80 to 90 runs next year, that would not surprise me at all. And, you know, I do think he's someone who over the next 3 years could easily steal you in excess of 150 bases.
Yeah, I think that's all entirely fair on him. Does his caught stealing rate worry you as he ages?
Sure. A little bit, but like, I don't know. I mean, I think, and maybe this is a point against him of what I just said, but I feel like when he starts to get to the point where he can't like run anymore, he's just probably not going to play, right? Like, he's not someone who's going to have this long career and like eventually, you know, he doesn't run anymore, but he's still playing. If he's not stealing 40 bases a year, he's just probably not going to be an everyday player anymore. So by the time that really catches up to him, I don't know if we'll need to worry about it, if that makes sense.
No, that makes sense. As we go a little further down this, DJ LeMahieu, we'll do kind of a little lightning round the rest of this tier, and then we'll kind of go on to other people. Craig, does DJ LeMahieu crack your top 10?
I don't know what to do with DJ LeMahieu. I was not a believer in him at all as being real. I would say no, he wouldn't, if only because I would probably flip him and Carpenter. I think Carpenter's really good, and I believe in him a little bit more in terms of consistency. And so I probably have him just on the outside looking in. I don't think it's unreasonable in the slightest.
Okay.
I mean, he's been this guy for a season and a half, kind of, two full seasons. I don't think he, like Murphy, I don't think he's a 350 type hitter. That said, he can clearly hit for average. And, you know, I guess here's my concern with him is that in 2015, I think he built most of his value. Yeah, he hit 300, and that's well and good, but most of his value was built into the stolen bases, and he hit for way more average last year, and way more power. But he also, the stolen bases were basically cut in half at 11. So, you know, he hit for way more power. That ended up being 11 home runs. That's not really a difference maker in a position this deep at this point. So that's more where my concern comes in. I'm sure he'll give value. I don't know if you can be certain on what type of value you're getting that's outside of average, though.
Yeah, I agree with you that it's a little unpredictable. And while that can be, it can be both a positive and a negative. Because we've seen him do all of this stuff at some point over the last couple of years. So when it all comes together, it could look really nice. But when, you know, it's hard to plan for him returning value in a certain place. Craig, staying with you, you talked about Matt Carpenter. What mm-hmm. do you think the percentage is that he has eligibility other than at first base going into next year?
I think there's a decent chance. I mean, I think he's not so bad a defender that he couldn't, you know, see time there. And I think they're probably going to move their pieces around a decent amount. And I think there are going to be times, I don't think they're going to want to have him come out of the lineup. I think there will be times when Matt Adams will play, and so he'll end up, you know, in a platoon situation. And so Carpenter will end up, you know, either at third or second.
Okay. Ben, what, in 10 words, what is Dustin Pedroia for fantasy owners right now?
Still very good when healthy, but won't always be healthy.
Craig.
Uh-huh.
Is this the version of Jonathan Scope you were waiting for?
Yeah, I mean, right, I think so. I mean, do you want a bigger answer than that?
Sure. I mean, is this sustainable?
I don't know that you can call. I mean, look, he was really good in 2015 too. He was just hurt. But you know, I think he basically replicated that season as well as one can when they walk 3% of the time. You know, I think there's a problem in that he was a below average offensive player by WRC plus last year, which doesn't say very much. In fantasy, he was very helpful. And they don't really have anyone else to play instead of him. And he's a solid enough defender that I think he's not really in danger of losing time, but on another team, he might be in that sense. I do think he's a 20 plus homer hitter. Boy, I hope he keeps hitting for, you know, the 270 type average that he has, because otherwise he goes downhill real fast in terms of whether he's helping or hurting the team.
All right. I'm going to stick with you, Craig. The Dodgers new,
you know, I've had like the last three out of the last four.
Yeah.
No, and the one I had was 10 words.
Okay. I just want to make this clear.
That's true. Logan Forsyth.
Yeah.
Ben, you want to
talk about his team, right?
Huh?
You got his new team, right?
I know. That's because I care.
Or Kendrys. Okay. Ben can answer that. He saw more of him in the AL East anyway.
Sounds good. Ben, do you expect Forsyth to get better moving to LA than he was in Tampa, or do you expect him to be either the same guy or worse?
No, I mean, the only thing, maybe, you know, he has better contextual factors now, I think, because his lineup's going to be a lot better. But I think he's the same guy. He's already on the wrong side of 30. You know, when I think of Logan Forsyth, I think of like 270 with 18 home runs, and I think that's what he'll do as a Dodger, maybe with some more runs scored this year.
Cool. So Ben, let's stick with you. The next tier after this, and we can, if either of you guys feel a strong desire to talk about any of the names we're skipping over, you can jump back in. But three of the next four guys, in starting with number 20, are prospects. Starts with Raul Mondesi Jr., then Ian Happ, and then Ozzie Albies. Irregardless of where they would be on this list, how would you rank Mondesi, Happ, and Albies against each other right now?
Well, I had Albies ahead of Happ on the list that I sent you, which won't surprise anyone who's heard us speak before. I would probably go Albies, Happ, Mondesi, actually. I really don't trust Mondesi to get on base. I think your sentence about Mondesi in this write-up nails it. You said Mondesi has the speed to steal 40 bases, but he might also get on base at a 250 clip. If he gets on base at a 250 clip, I don't think he's going to be able to steal 40 bases. So I would have him last of the three. I think there's a very reasonable argument to prefer him to Albies because their profiles are a little similar. I just like Albies' hit tool a lot more, and I think Happ is super boring.
All right, Craig, do you agree with Ben most specifically on Raul Mondesi?
Yeah, I agree with what he said, but I think I'm also a little bit more optimistic. I think I'm a little closer to where you are. I mean, he's really going to run, and I mean, I guess their other options are Whit Merrifield and like Chesler Cuthbert, or do they still have Colon? I was going to ask.
They do.
Yeah, so, I mean, look, the Royals are going to be so, so bad this year. And I think at some point they're just going to hand him the reins and say, you know, suck, don't suck. It's your job right now to figure it out because we need you to be good, you know, by the next time we're going to be good.
Yeah. I mean, the other quick thing here is that Alcides Escobar is a free agent after 2017.
Right.
So
he could have. Yeah. They have a lot of spots to fill there.
They do. And, you know, to that point, the Royals are going to be bad, and Escobar might be their best trade chip.
Yeah.
Of guys they would reasonably trade this year. So,
I mean, they could trade Escobar and Kane this year. It wouldn't shock me.
Yeah. Okay. So let's go down to the next tier. Ben, I want to talk to you about Hernán Pérez and Joe Panik. Perez kind of jumped out of nowhere to put up just a ridiculous fantasy line. Do you think that he can come anywhere near repeating any of those numbers that he put up last year?
I think he can get a little closer than people realize, just because, you know, he only got 430 plate appearances last year, and the Brewers have every reason to sort of, you know, give him more than that as long as he's producing at a commensurate level. Am I positive he will? No. But if you told me he's going to hit 270 with 10 homers and 30 steals again, I could see that.
So I got into this with JP Breen on GChat, because we were kind of talking about Perez. He's interesting. I think there's both the risk that he's not as good as he was last year, like that just never happens again. And also, the question is, like, would you predict him to get 400 plate appearances again right now? I mean, right now he's a platoon player for them, right?
Yeah.
So the question is, where is he getting the playing time from? I mean, obviously, if someone gets hurt, I think that would help him. It helps that he can play, you know, the corner outfield as well. I think the problem comes in that, you know, VR is going to be at second base. They have Travis Shaw at third. You know, Shaw probably can't hit lefties, but so that leaves him kind of on the short side of the platoon, and they have outfield prospects who are going to come up and take playing time if Santana or anyone else or Keon Broxton falters or anyone like that. So the question is, where is he going to get the at-bats to be worthwhile, you know, to even match last year, much less build on it?
I think a majority will come at third base because Travis Shaw is hot garbage.
Okay.
And yeah. I do, you know, I know they have some outfield prospects coming up, and that is a point well taken, but their only like actual good outfielder is still Ryan Braun. So it would not surprise me if he gets 60 starts in the outfield somehow.
Okay. Yeah. I actually was arguing with JP in I was on the positive side, because I think because he has so much flexibility, it's not unreasonable. But those were the questions he asked, and I thought they were kind of point well taken.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah. All right. So forget about Joe Panik. He's boring anyway.
Thank God.
Craig, if you knew that Willie Calhoun would play second base in the majors, where would he be on this list for you?
I'm assuming you mean for like a decent amount of time, more than like
I'm talking just about for debuting. pretty much his 20s. Say
okay.
Yeah.
I'd probably have him right behind Forsythe, somewhere in the 16 to 19 range. I think he's right in that mix. He can really hit.
I was going to say above Devon Travis, so we're right on the same path.
Correct? Yeah, I mean, I think that makes sense. He can really hit. And I don't know that he's going to hit. I mean, he's 5'8", and I think he had 27 home runs at Double A this year. Like, he can hit for power too. I think one will come at the expense of the other, just based on kind of how he swings right now. But I really don't have a question that he'll hit. It's just whether he can be anything of value anywhere else to get himself in the lineup. I mean, as we said, the downside for him was like we had him like a roll 45 on the prospect list, and it was like a 5'8 DH, which that's you don't see that, and that's kind of the scary part. You don't see that, and also there's not a DH in the NL, so those are the risks involved.
I'm with you. I put that in the write up that he would have been in that tier that started with Scope. I think he probably would have settled right in the middle of that tier for me. But yeah, the bat is very, very legit. It's just a huge question mark where he's going to end up. Ben, who do you like from the 31 to 40 range here to make a jump up this year?
God, you know, if he was going to get playing time, I would say Wilmer Defoe. I still really like Defoe. I could see it be Dilson Herrera if they do find a way to either move Phillips or they just tell Phillips to like fuck off. Sorry, you don't want to be traded, but we're not playing you. I think Herrera is a prime example of a guy who's undervalued in Dynasty because of when he lost his prospect status. Because, you know, for all intents and purposes, he's pretty much still a prospect. But because he got that playing time in 2015, I don't think people really think about him anymore. So he's someone who wouldn't shock me if we rank him closer to the sort of that like Mondesi, Wong, Hap, Albies tier we talked about. If he was up there, it wouldn't surprise me. I can tell you who won't be in this tier, and it's Jace Peterson, who is extremely bad and is like 15 spots too high on this list.
Amen.
Craig, what about you? Same question.
I won't double up. I think I agree with Ben on Herrera. I think those are good points. I think the guy for me is Forrest Wall. He hasn't hit kind of the way everyone anticipated, and he needs to hit to drive him. He is still a second baseman. He is still in the Rockies system. He's in good places to hit. He's still young for his level. There are a lot of reasons and excuses one could make on his behalf. The fact that you need to make excuses for him right now is not satisfying. But I do think that the innate talent is still there for him to be really valuable and to be a guy who contributes in average and speed. And then, you know, given that he's in Colorado, I think there will be at least playable power there.
Okay. Ben, in the 41 to 50 range, who do you think is the most likely player on this list to be a usable fantasy player, whether it's one of the veterans in 2017 or one of the prospects in the future?
Oh God, that's boring. Probably Howie Kendrick, because I think he can still like flirt with being serviceable if he gets playing time. Other than that, I don't know. I mean, Whit Merrifield was just okay-ish. Like, if Mondesi really flops, or if they do trade Escobar and Mondesi moves over, I guess I could see Merrifield being relevant in like TDGX size leagues.
All right. Craig, anyone jump out for you that hasn't been mentioned?
I'll throw out two names because I'll be really brief. I'm not very high on Luis Urias, but people really like him and think he can hit. And so I think if the bar is useful, he'll probably qualify as that just on his ability to hit for average. Scott Kingery can run, in my opinion. I like him a little bit more. I know he's one of those guys who's better in fantasy than real life. So I think if he gets the playing time, he'll be usable in average, you know, and he'll run enough to accrue value.
All right.
Also, we mentioned him kind of in the break before coming back, but you have at 39 Shedrick Long. I'm glad you have him in here. I really like him. He's very fast. He's, I think, a former catcher playing second base for the Rams.
He's such someone, a weird profile.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a weird profile, and there's still kind of a ways to go with the bat, but he's someone who, if he starts hitting, is kind of maybe a better version of what I just described for Scott Kingery, who might be able to hit for average and is going to run and get you some stolen bases.
Could you imagine if he was still like a potential 30 to 40 steal catcher?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the problem is he, you know, catchers don't run that much for a reason. I mean, Russell Martin was like the closest we've been to that in recent memory. I guess Kendall before that, but
yeah. Yeah.
I mean, there's a reason, right? Yeah. It's just their knees go, so but yeah. He had an interesting year. He was already at high A, and he hit for average there. I mean, he hit 322 in a relatively small sample, but he hit 280 in low A, and he's only 20. So he's an interesting guy to keep an eye on.
Ben, who would you rather have in 2017, Alan Hansen or Enya?
Enya.
Thank you.
Welcome back to episode 80 of There Is No Offseason. As always, we'll send you out with a little housekeeping. BP Annual 2017 is out on Amazon, and we've seen photographic evidence that it is now being shipped to some very lucky people. So please order it if you like anything that Craig, Brett, and I write. Just kidding, go for some of the much more impressive names that are bringing you commentary and essays. And yes, we will indeed play the BP Annual Drinking Game again soon. You can follow us on Twitter at Tino Podcast and get in touch with us through email at tinopodcast@gmail.com. You can find Brett on Twitter at Dynasty Guru. You can find Craig at CD. That's CD as in
Carnage Deliverer.
Goldstein. You can find our producer George at George Bissell. And you can find me at Ben Carsley. Thank you for listening and have a good night. Welcome. Maybe the poorest start in Tino history. All right, we'll go in five.